Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, if a week is a long time in politics, a year can feel like a generation, which must be how it feels for Keir Starmer's Labour Party, 12 months on from that landslide election victory, which saw them win 63% of all of the seats in Westminster with a majority of over 150 MPs. Well, here's how Keir Starmer sounded a year ago.
Thank you so much for that reception. What an amazing reception. We did it! Yeah! You campaigned for it, you fought for it, you voted for it, and now it has arrived. Change begins now.
But a year on, the biggest change has been to Keir Starmer's political fortunes as backbenchers forced him into yet another welfare U-turn, prompting the question, can he balance Britain's budget and who is really running the UK? Well, for their analysis, I'm joined by Associate Editor at the Daily Mirror, Kevin Maguire, and Chief Political Commentator at the Times and co-author of Get In, the Inside Story of Labour under Starmer, who's called Patrick Maguire. But gentlemen, I know you're not related, so we'll make that clear from the outset. Patrick, I might begin with you. This is a big question, but answer it as best you can. What's gone wrong for Keir Starmer in the last 12 months?
Look, more or less everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong. It's not to say the government hasn't had successes. It's not to say they're not making any progress at all on their key pledges like fixing the NHS or fixing the economy. But there have been a lot of avoidable political mistakes. Listeners may remember the first 100 days of Keir Starmer's government were effectively subsumed by a row over the freebies Keir Starmer was accepting. They were subsumed by a briefing war in Downing Street over Keir Starmer's last chief of staff, Sue Gray, and they were defined by a deeply, deeply unpopular policy, cutting the winter fuel allowance to pensioners that Keir Starmer has now U-turned on and admitted was a mistake. So really, those early political misjudgments set the tone. The freebie row and Keir Starmer's delayed response to it, he really resents press intrusion, damaged his popularity. Their mistaken belief that they could blame the Tories for a deeply unpopular cut sort of soured the well, poisoned the well of public opinion. And those things they haven't really recovered from. So they've been sort of stumbling on, arguing amongst themselves over the course of a year. The Treasury, a very powerful Treasury under Rachel Reeves, has controlled much of the domestic agenda. And it's only recently that Keir Starmer is rediscovering the authority of his office, looking at very obvious mistakes like the winter fuel allowance cut, the depth and pace of the cuts to benefits MPs will be voting on later. And he's sort of waking up and saying, no, actually, I want it done my way. But it was those early mistakes that really set the tone and engendered a lot of ill feeling in the public and in Westminster.
Right. So, Kevin, to come to you on this, and whatever you say about the legacy left by the Conservatives, if Keir Starmer can't get a handle on spending and on balancing the books, he really is setting himself up for future failure, isn't he?
Oh, that's right. Just go back to Bill Clinton. The economy's stupid. You have to be able to put money into people's pockets and at the same time arrange public investments so public services improve. And yes, health is on the mend, big amounts of money going into that. Patrick's right, there have been some successes, but he doesn't feel like the man with a plan and a vision and a competency, which we all thought he was his pitch, because of course he'd been the director of public prosecutions, so he thought he can run a big organization. But in government, it's been buffeted by events. He's got big calls wrong. Winter fuel was one of them. Another is the welfare cuts that will be voted on today. He made a speech saying Britain is an island of strangers, which he said he hadn't read, and he was distracted because his house had just been firebombed. So he was caught up in that. He ruled out another inquiry at National Grooming Gangs, and he backtracked on that. He's been more of an ambassador, Starmer, focusing on foreign affairs. It's hugely important. You can point to new deals with India, the US, the EU, NATO, Ukraine, Middle East, all taking up a lot of his time and thinking. But there's no doubt he's taken the eye off the ball at home. And his Downing Street operation, Sugray went, Morgan McSweeney came in as chief of staff, the Irishman, great campaigner for the general election victory. But you can't see evidence of effective rule and competency. Tony Blair used to be able to handle six big issues at any one time. He was always juggling. He had to be across quite a big waterfront. Keir Starmer just doesn't seem to be operating like that. And I think it's kind of, we're at the point because he's fallen faster and further than any other newly elected prime minister, Reformer Nigel Farage, or surging in the polls. It's time for a reset. May not be quite a relaunch, but it's got to be a reset.
With him in charge, though, still, right?
I think so at the moment. You do hear for the first time, maybe Patrick hears these voices as well, Labour MPs contemplating Keir Starmer not being there at the next general election. I don't want to over-egg it.
Patrick, what are you hearing on that front?
Well, look, much the same. I think it's best expressed by a minister I was having a pint with last week. In the depths of despair, this was at the height of the welfare rebellion last week, and this was an impeccable loyalist. Most of these people do not want chaos. They don't want to emulate the Tories in switching leaders. But they said to me, one day I'll wake up in the week and I'll think Angela Rayner couldn't possibly be prime minister. And next morning I'll wake up and think, well, it couldn't be any worse than this. And they said their life is a sort of constant loop of one day thinking the prime minister is the only option and the next thinking they'll have to try something different. Now, as Kevin says, it's not organised. There's no suggestion of imminent danger to Keir Starmer, but that idea is in the bloodstream. And once it's in there, and once that doubt has been sown, it's incredibly difficult for a prime minister to undo.
Yeah, I was watching Angela Rayner during PMQs last week. That was when NATO was on. Right, he was away last week, and so she was standing in. And I just felt that she had Kemi Badenoch twitching uncomfortably in a way that Keir Starmer doesn't seem to be able to do. It was just very effective, Kevin. I mean, do you see that from Angela Rayner, or do you think that she's also the wrong person to be at the helm?
No, I hear her name mentioned quite regularly now as the potential successor, because the big threat to Labour is from reform in the North, and she's an authentic Northerner. You know, the Deputy Prime Minister who left school at 16 with no exam results but a baby on the way, and has made her way in life. And she's incredibly tough. She's resourceful. She's cleverer than she's given credit for. She's frequently been written off and proved her doubters wrong. No, I hear her name. I hear Wes Streeting. I hear even Andy Burnham, who isn't an MP. He's the mayor in Greater Manchester. It's beginning to take hold, and that speculation is there. And it'll be undermining for Keir Starmer, which is why he needs to raise his game, get his operation functioning properly, cut out the unnecessary own goals, and convince people that he is a prime minister who can give them a sense of hope and optimism and produce a vision for how he's going to improve people's lives in the country.
And Patrick, coming back to Morgan McSweeney, the chief of staff, Keir Starmer's second chief of staff, and he is from Cork, of course. He's very important to Keir Starmer, isn't he? He really is his right-hand man. As Kevin said, he masterminded the campaign.
Yes, he did. And look, I've just filed a story for the Times, in which Keir Starmer at Cabinet this morning made clear he was fully supportive of Morgan McSweeney. There's been a lot of backbiting and briefing and speculation over the weekend that there's a divide emerging there. Keir Starmer really, really wants to emphasise that they are one team, because Keir Starmer knows Morgan McSweeney made him leader of the Labour Party. He got him elected as Prime Minister. And yes, his approach can be divisive. As he agrees with Kevin that the main threat to Labour in the North is reform, and they can't do that without they can't win the election without taking on reform. Some Labour MPs don't like that because it means Labour sort of tilts towards the right rather than the left. But Keir Starmer very much wanting to be behind his chief of staff, whether that's because he fully believes in Morgan McSweeney or whether he knows after the Sue Gray debacle that there's nothing more damaging or distracting to the government than speculation about your staffing and your staff being in each other's throats. I mean, you wouldn't know from the papers in the UK this morning that the government announced a 10-year plan for the NHS, its biggest campaign pledge, because it's all about divisions in the parliamentary party and attacks on people in Downing Street.
Kevin, one current issue that speaks to Keir Starmer's judgment at the moment is his comments on NECAP, the Belfast rap trio. And it seems any British politician who criticises them is sort of playing into their hands. So why do you think Keir Starmer is weighing in? Is this all linked again to the battle against reform?
I think it is. I think he thinks that's where most people will be. They won't like what they said. Did they break the law? Well, we'll find out. But in a sense, he normally avoids it. But when he gets asked, he feels he has to answer, and he gives them publicity, which is what they want. And then the result, so criticism comes in that he seems to be more concerned about what rock groups and rappers say than actually what the Israeli government is doing in Gaza, where people are dying. Mm-hmm. And that criticism keeps coming back at him. I think he would prefer not to say anything, but when he's prodded, he feels he has to say something, he has to condemn him.
So what does he need to do, Patrick, to recover? I mean, shift to the left, possibly?
Look, there's an electoral case for that. You know, we've been talking about Reform UK and Nigel Farage this morning, but if you look at the polling, Labour is shedding votes to its left. It's shedding votes to the Greens in urban areas. It's shedding votes to left-wing independents who oppose the government on Gaza and have a particular foothold among Britain's Muslim community. So there's no easy answer. The word delivery is probably the key one. I mean, speaking to Downing Street aides last year, they were sort of quite sniffy about the idea that the government could do anything on delivery. They say, look at Joe Biden. He's about to lose an election despite the US economy going gangbusters. But it's clear that unless the government can say to the public, we've got a stable economy, the NHS is back on its feet, we're cutting immigration, Nigel Farage can point at Westminster, can point at a squabbling Labour Party, and the Greens can as well, by the way, and say, you know, they're not doing anything for anyone. It's time for British voters to take a punt on parties of the further left and the further right. So really, he needs to get the government working, but he also needs to tell a story. That's something he himself has admitted in recent weeks he's not very good at and hasn't done enough at. He needs to, you know, he's a problem solver. He doesn't really think in terms of ideology. That doesn't mean he doesn't need a way to put all of the things the government is doing in one box and say, this is my ideology, this is what I am about, and this is what we're about as a government. He hasn't done that yet, but I think it would help measurably.
It's so interesting to speak to you both. Thanks a lot for your time. Patrick Maguire from The Times and Kevin Maguire, Associate Editor at The Daily Mirror. Coming up next, the author of the book, The Unprocessed Plate, Rhiannon Lambert, will be with us.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.